This is the Gambling Gauchos.
Hey, if we keep playing and fighting for each other, and no matter what happens, we just say, what's next? That's all we do. Somebody turn on some damn music.
You're listening to the Gambling Gauchos. Talking Texas Tech, betting on the Big 12 and beyond. We've got everything you need. Money lines, memes, and matadors.
Well, you want to quit, Ethan? That'll be the day.
Now, here's Kyle Jacobson and Rob Bro, the Money Line Matadors, the Casino Cowboys, the Parlay Picadors.
You see, in this world, there's two kinds of people, my friend. Those with loaded guns, and those who dig. You dig. With
the Gambling Gauchos. Oh, and one more thing. It's all West Texas. It always has been.
Welcome to the Gambling Gauchos. I'm Rob Bro. He's Kyle Jacobson, live in the Cardinal Sports Center studio. Cardinal Sports Center, where you can gear up for anything you need to gear up for. Texas Tech baseball, the upcoming football season. Maybe you're traveling for Texas Tech football and you want everyone to know that you are a Red Raider. You can get all your Texas Tech athletic gear at Cardinals Sports Center, anything you need to do this summer as well. You can get it online, mycardinalsports.com, or in person right outside the loop on Slide Road. Kyle, how you doing, man?
I am excellent.
Good.
Why is that funny?
You just short and sweet. You're excellent.
Yeah.
Let me get back into it. Hey, this is a Dave Campbell's Republic of Football episode as well. We always are. We love those people over at Dave Campbell's, the Republic of Football. I'm excited to listen to some of the other spring game recaps. I saw the Baylor guys tweeting about theirs. I saw the TCU people tweeting about theirs this weekend. So excited to see what everyone else thinks about the spring game. Texas Tech also had their spring game. We'll talk about it a little bit today. I think we'll do baseball first and then recap the spring game just a little bit. We'll have a deep dive later in the week. We'll also talk Tyree Wilson today. But baseball-wise, another series win, not a sweep. You lose the third game again. You had a real opportunity this weekend to take a large step in the Big 12. Instead, you took a medium step. Thoughts on that, Kyle?
Yeah, that's basically exactly how I view it. If there's any series that you point to and say you kind of expect a sweep, or where not getting a sweep feels like a disappointment, it's when you get to play by and like far and away the worst team in the conference in Lubbock, and you jump out to a 2-0 lead with a lot of your bullpen available because of Molina going 7 innings in game one. It stinks, and you alluded to it. We've been tracking results versus common opponents with Texas to try to make up for that 3-game sweep. And you got one back with the common opponent of Oklahoma State. And you're looking at it this weekend and thinking, okay, if OU can win that series somehow, then you can make up one there. If you sweep Baylor, you can make up one there. And OU did their part for sure. They get the 3-game sweep in Austin. And had you beaten Baylor, you would have made up a total of 4 games against those 3 common opponents, Oklahoma State, Oklahoma, and Baylor. And instead, you match UT's result against Baylor. And so you don't take a step back. I mean, you gained in the standings, and it was a decent weekend from that respect. But, you really wanted that sweep, especially because you didn't get it in Norman. And so going 4-2 in those two series feels like a slight disappointment. And now you almost look around and Texas is certainly still a contender, but Oklahoma State finishes off a sweep in Lawrence and West Virginia sweeps in Morgantown against TCU. And so I think you've got at this point 4 or 5 legitimate conference title contenders. And I think you're in the mix there, but you could have really, like you said, taken a really big step had you been able to complete the sweep against Baylor.
Yeah, and Texas got swept. If I would have told you there were 3 sweeps this weekend and Texas Tech wasn't involved in one of them, I think at least I would have been very surprised.
Yeah, and the way the standings shape up now, I guess it's good and bad. You know, we thought that we were playing the 4 toughest opponents in the first 4 Big 12 series.
Yeah.
And then OU kind of wasn't what we thought they would be, and West Virginia now looks really good. Kansas State looks far more formidable. And so you kind of, in that respect, like that those two teams, Kansas State and West Virginia, are ahead of you in the standings, and you control your own destiny there in 6 total games against those two squads. The downside is, you know, you kind of went through what we thought was a gauntlet, went, I think, 4-5 in that stretch before the OU series. Now it's like, okay, now we got to go on the road to Manhattan, on the road to Morgantown. So maybe the hard part of your schedule isn't quite behind you yet. But yeah, if you somewhere or another get 4 out of those 6 on the road, I think you're going to be very much in the mix on the final weekend of the season.
Yeah, and if you just win every Big 12 series remaining, the West Virginia, Kansas State, and Kansas, you'll have 14 Big 12 wins. That's 6 more. You have 8. You're finally above water since the – you've been under or at 500 in the Big 12 since the Texas series. So you finally broke that plateau. You're back to 8-7. 14 wins in the Big 12, I think it'll get you in the tournament. There was a year where it didn't, I think, in 2015 maybe. But you're just a different caliber right now. And I think with this, even bad non-con that you ended up having, 14 wins in the Big 12 will be good enough. I still think you need a sweep. But Kansas State, West Virginia both ahead of you, and then Oklahoma State, the, I guess, leader in the clubhouse because they have a series ahead. They don't have the best winning percentage. That's West Virginia. They're number 1 in the Big 12. But at 11-7, they've played more Big 12 games and, you know, are 3 games ahead of you. I think Oklahoma State, likely the Big 12 champion. You've beaten them, so that looks good.
Which is crazy.
Yeah.
Sorry to interrupt. They took 2 out of 3 against Texas in Stillwater. But besides that, as far as the other contenders, they lost their series against TCU.
Yep.
They lost their series against Texas Tech.
Yep.
And they lost their series against West Virginia. And so that's where I'm skeptical. Can you lose against 3 of the top 4 other contenders and still come out the champion? Yes, you can if you sweep, you know, Baylor, Kansas, and kind of rack up all the wins that way. But that would be a little bit strange to me if Oklahoma State does win and then like teams 2, 3, and 4 potentially are teams that they lost to 2 out of 3.
Yeah, and they only have 2 Big 12 series left. They're a series ahead. Yeah. And that's Kansas. Let's see where they are. Kansas State in Stillwater and Oklahoma on the road. And sometimes they play those neutral site.
They hosted Oklahoma in a midweek non-conference game last week and destroyed them.
Yeah, 19-8.
Of course, midweek you take with a grain of salt given the pitching depth there. So yeah, I don't know. They certainly could, and I don't know, if you just blindfolded me and asked me to guess the Big 12 standings, I wouldn't think that they'd be in first based on everything I just said, but sure enough they are at this juncture. And West Virginia and Texas still haven't played. That'll of course be a very consequential series, and West Virginia, Texas Tech, of course. So yeah, I think a lot of it is actually in the Mountaineers' hands. You know, if they were, of course, looking at it mostly from Texas Tech's vantage point.
Yeah.
But West Virginia's probably looking at those and saying, if we can win both of those series or get 4 wins somewhere or another against those 2 opponents, you know, they could be looking at having series wins over all 4 of the other Big 12 title contenders.
That was a type of series late enough in the season where it will either break Texas or put them on an absolute tear. We'll have to see what happens. They do have a schedule remaining that is a little bit, I guess, more forgiving, maybe you could call it. Of course, in the Big 12, I have no idea anymore. I really don't. And as you outlined, you know, it could be that West Virginia and Kansas State are just two of the best teams, and we kind of slept on them a little too long, thinking they would fall off. Now, I've been respectful of West Virginia. They did not have J.J. Weatherholt for a couple of weeks. He came back this weekend. It was huge. And it's hard for me to believe one player is that big of a difference, but it certainly does feel like they are a much different team with him at second base.
When thinking back, I guess we had warning signs. They were the first Big 12 team to win a road series this season. And even just last weekend, maybe weekend before, they go to Stillwater. And Oklahoma State, just not to beat this dead horse, they are so up and down this year. Like,
yeah,
they're feeling disrespected when we put them at number two in the power rankings. And then the next weekend, they're like, we want to fire the coach. Then they lose a home series to West Virginia, and now they're atop the Big 12 standings. Just like the most up and down team, I think, in the conference this season. But yeah, I think it's fair to say at this point, there are no elite teams in the Big 12. Now, I might change my mind on that if West Virginia wins 5 out of 6 against Texas and Texas Tech. But there's a ton of parity. And even teams like Oklahoma, who I think have been disappointing and living just, you know, one step above Baylor for most of this season. Okay, well, they took 2 out of 4 against Stanford. They just swept in Austin against a team that's been number one in the conference all year. And even Baylor, as bad as they are and as much of a rebuild job as that is, they've been a thorn in a lot of teams' sides. Even if it's not resulting in W's, I think they had 2 one-run losses to Texas. Like, they were actually a couple plays away from sweeping that series. And so there's no, like, really just bad team that's just a cakewalk either. So interesting dynamic in the conferences here. Usually you have 3-ish teams that have realistic hopes of going to Omaha. I think that's probably a stretch this year, but I'm not sure if it's ever been this even 1 through 9, especially kind of in the middle there, like 3 through 6, 3 through 7, let's say, because you can, for the most part, flip a coin right now. That's why doing the power rankings that we've been doing, like, yeah, there are legitimate gripes, you know, but somebody has to go 6, somebody has to go 3, even if they're a really flawed team.
Right.
That's just kind of been the nature of the conference this year.
And I do think, you know, 1 through 5 is much, much closer than 6 through 9. Like, I think the bottom of the conference is pretty bad. But again, you've had those bad teams beating good teams every once in a while. You know, Baylor has 6 conference wins.
I think 5. 5 and 10 now.
So, I mean, that's not nothing. Let's do get into the series a little bit this weekend. Specifically Texas Tech and Baylor. Mason Molina, he's back. And he was huge on Friday night, in my opinion.
Yeah, we talked about him a little bit last weekend, just kind of basically saying you needed more from him than to be an opener for Girton. And so when he trotted out there as the Friday starter, I was like almost a little bit disappointed. Like, okay, are we going to see 3 innings from him and then Girton? Because I think you need a lot of innings out of both of those guys to be successful. Maybe that was the plan, but he goes 7 innings, no runs allowed, 2 hits, and looked like the Molina that we've come to expect since last year. And so it was good to see him get back on track. And you can say, well, it's Baylor. Okay, but Baylor did just fine scoring runs on Sunday. They've done just fine scoring runs on other Big 12 opponents. And so I think that's really kind of bullet points 1, 2, and 3 for Friday. You know, your bats are what they always are in Lubbock. You score 10 runs. But getting 7 innings out of a weekend starter is just not something that you've done this year. And so really, really good to see the one starter that you kind of feel like you should have that level of confidence in, get back to normal, get back on track, and have a performance like that that you hope lifts his confidence moving forward here down the home stretch.
Yeah, last weekend in Austin, Baylor scored 9, 9, and 6.
I think that was in Waco, but yeah, point well taken.
It was in Waco. You're right.
Yeah.
I was looking at the Texas.
So they're not losing games because they just can't hit. I mean, they're
right.
As we saw, most of their pitchers are don't have that great of an ERA, and they've lost some competitive games. So, again, people can – they might poo-poo that and say, well, it's Baylor. Of course, Molina's going to do that. I think seven scoreless innings against hardly anybody is nothing to sneeze at.
Yeah, especially this year. You haven't had it.
Right.
We talked about last week's start. What was it? It was a midweek. It was the Tabor Fast. Had one of the best starts of the season since Bo Blessy, and then now all of a sudden, I think that's the best start of the season.
I think so too.
Followed by Trendon Parrish, who another one. And I told you, I don't know if you remember, but I said going into the Baylor series, the perfect setup, okay, for your pitching is to not need Beckel for Molina to go seven, control that game without Beckel, have Beckel close Saturday, be prepared for that, and then in game three, you have Gurton to come in after whoever starts. It's exactly what happened, but Gurton was the one that gave up the runs that ultimately lost the game. Now, offensively, you've not been good in game threes since the Oklahoma State series. I think I could probably go back and be more specific about that, but you have struggled certainly in the last few weekends against teams in game three, but that is a frustrating waste of a pitching performance from the first two guys to have your bullpen at full strength, basically. Now, I know it was a doubleheader. If you would have played again today, Beckel would not have stayed in that game. I think he would have pitched an inning and would have gotten him out quicker and he could have pitched again Sunday. You probably have a guy from Friday who can come back. You might not have to leave Gurton in to give up, but he did it all in two at bats, maybe the damage. So I don't know. It felt like a waste to not sweep there, especially after your first two games were so flawless pitching wise, in my opinion.
Well, I'll be honest. I mean, I don't think a lot of guys can make a living betting against Tim Tadlock, right. But I don't know why you trot Beckel out there at all on Saturday. You had run support. You had, a pretty decent lead there. And so I would have saved him for a potential game three. And maybe they're thinking like, well, we don't want to go all weekend without pitching him at all, which I would kind of understand. But you find yourself in game three where it's tied up in the seventh or eighth. It's like, well, that's a great spot for your best relief pitcher.
Yeah.
And I wish he was available. So you needed Ryan Free in the middle innings of that game because it was I think it was even a tie game, 4-4 at one point. So I don't question that, but I'm not sure why Beckel went in on game one on Saturday.
Let me go to the box score because I feel like I might have an answer for you. That game being close when he was warming could have affected it. Let's see. Free pitched. Okay, through the seventh. Let's see. Sixth inning. Yeah, so Baylor scored five in the sixth. You scored four, and then he came. Yeah, see? I don't know. So it was 10. Oh, yeah, that's what it was. Okay, so Beckel enters. They score three more, and then he stays in, right? So you end up being in there with a big lead. Here's my thought process. It's a doubleheader. If he is warming, Beckel's warming, and then you score three more and you set him down, can he warm again 4 hours later for the next game? Again, if it was on Sunday, I think you could have just parked him and then let him throw a few more, like a little bit of it, a bullpen, and then have him play the next game. But I think once you started warming him in that first game, you had to pitch him. I think that's what it was. Because you can't, especially when it's cold, you can't have a guy warm up and then sit around for 4 hours and then warm up again, I think.
Yeah, maybe that's what it was.
I agree. You wish you could have had anybody else with a five-run lead.
Yes, especially again on Friday. You used one bullpen arm, Andrew Devine. And so, again, you had to sort of bridge those middle innings with Ryan Free on Saturday game one. But I don't know, like, could you go to Derek Bridges there and I don't know, some other arms, Dax Dothy.
Yeah.
I don't know. I do question that decision. Like, I was listening on the radio a little bit in and out, and I'm like, okay, it's, we have a 5-run lead. Why is our best pitcher in the game? Like, that's not the role that he typically plays. And then, of course, fast forward a few hours later, it's like 4-4 or whatever it was there in the 7th to 8th. And I'm like, man, I wish we had Brandon Beckel right now. So I do question that. I don't recommend really betting against Tim Tadlock when it comes to managing a baseball game, but I do wonder about that one. You know, you're talking about warming up, cooling down, warming it back up again. I did that tonight with some brisket that my stepdad smoked for us this weekend when we were out at the property. Reheated brisket is pretty good, and he did a good job smoking that brisket. Didn't have the heart to tell him it wasn't quite up to the standards of Rojino barbecue, but that's, hey, there's no shame in that. You know, that's like being told that you're not quite as handsome as Brad Pitt. You're like, okay, I'll take that.
Right.
I think we just came up with Rojino's new tagline, the Brad Pitt of barbecue.
I'm in. Maybe we find
I don't know.
The Cliff Kingsbury. No, that's not, that don't work.
Yeah. I don't know if that'll stick, but you get the point. Rojino barbecue is the best barbecue in West Texas. Give them a follow on social at RojinoBBQ. Check out their website, RojinoBBQ.com. They've got their menu on there. You can order ahead to make sure that your food is there when you arrive. Home base out in Olton, or they've got the mobile food truck going all across West Texas. And we appreciate their support of the Gambling Gauchos.
I guess final thoughts on the baseball series. I'm not going to complain too much about winning a Big 12 series. Even against Baylor, even at home. You really should have swept that, but you've got three more opportunities to find a sweep. Harder on the road, one more against Kansas. But you really, every time you don't sweep, you really thin the margin to just, you can't lose another one. You just can't. I think if you lose another Big 12 series, you're probably a 3 seed.
Potentially, yeah. I mean, the conference RPI as a whole is not great, and so you're, it's not like basketball where every night is a quad one game for the most part. You know, a lot of kind of middling RPIs up and down the conference standings. And so, you know, it's not the case that, okay, our RPI is going to go up automatically next weekend. It's like, okay, we're RPI 60, they're RPI 50. One or the other takes 2 out of 3, and okay, our RPI is the exact same as it was coming in. So yeah, that's going to be a challenge. I think West Virginia now is maybe the team with them or Oklahoma State, probably the best odds to host. Yeah. And I don't think you'll get more than one host.
No. And the RPI is so dependent on what everybody else is doing. Texas getting swept, TCU getting swept, and you losing once against a terrible RPI team dropped you 3 in the RPI. And you had a pretty damn good week beating Grand Canyon twice.
Yeah.
And winning 2 games against Baylor. You know, going 4-1 and dropping in the RPI because everyone else in the Big 12 you needed to win lost RPI-wise. Now, just flat-out schedule-wise, it was a great weekend for Texas Tech because Texas got swept and TCU got swept and you're trying to move up. By the way, TCU, are they broken? I mean, they have not been good.
I mean, losing a – what was it? What was their biggest – was 8 runs their biggest margin of their biggest lead that weekend in Lubbock?
9? Was it up to 9?
And if you lose an 8 or 9 run lead and then lose that series,
yeah,
like you said with the Texas series, it's either like a turning point or kind of bottoming out point. But after that, they beat Oklahoma State. And so I kind of thought, okay, yeah, like they're back on track. But I don't know. We do have a comment here that I think sets up for maybe a look ahead.
Muscle it out.
It says Zane Petty and Tabor Fast were also really good in the midweek against a couple very legitimate hitters in Grand Canyon. Bullpen was saved all week to Saturday. Tabor Fast especially is the one that stood out to me. I thought he looked really good. Now, because he started and threw 6-plus innings on Tuesday, he's not available this weekend. But with only 1 midweek game this week, I wonder if he doesn't start and if they try to work him back into the weekend rotation, either as you know, a true starter, an opener, a long reliever after an opener. I wonder if he's kind of earned that opportunity. And so, of course, if he gets the start against Abilene Christian, then he won't be pitching next weekend. But if he's not the midweek starter, I do wonder if maybe they're going to continue tinkering with the weekend pitching rotation and if he might have a role in that. Because he spent some time earlier this season, you might remember, as your Sunday starter, and then sort of fell off of that role. And I wonder if he's maybe climbing his way back up.
Yeah, you don't have multiple midweeks again. So the time to move Taberfast back to Sunday would be now. I think you've pretty much settled on Molina on that Friday night role. And if you're in a regional as a 3 or a 2, you have to win game one. Molina is your best pitcher, best starting pitcher. And I think you've set up for a regional with him on Friday, and he'll be in that role. And then Trendon Parrish has looked very good his last 2 or 3 starts, even since TCU, pretty much, maybe up and down a little bit, but he's looked very good on the weekend as a Saturday guy, game two. Now, if it does work out that way and you win game one, he would pitch against the 1 seed in the regional. But if Fast is your third guy, yeah, I think this weekend would be the weekend to put him back there. And then you have, you know, whoever else pitch against ACU this weekend. Now, they're not bad. They're credible.
Right.
Not incredible, but they're credible.
I think their RPI is pretty close to yours, right? Like 60-something?
Yeah. But Zane Petty has also been, you know, pretty good.
Well, not, I can't help but wonder, with Bo Blessy, now he's healthy enough to pitch because we saw him in Norman. Did not see him this weekend, correct?
Right. What? Not really a spot for him.
I wonder, is it the craziest thing to think that he might be your midweek starter as you start to see if he can maybe build some stamina, get some experience back in a spot that doesn't matter as much? Because, again, I think your RPI at this point, you cannot build it back up to a regional host level. Like,
right.
To me, your chips are all in on either winning the Big 12 or not. And so does Bo Blessy become your midweek starter the rest of the season to get him some – again, just get him some pitches – and maybe he, by the very end of the season, is like starter number 3 for a regional weekend or something. But is that a good spot to use him to save guys like Taberfast and Zane Petty if you want to try to work them into the weekend rotation for these last few Big 12 series and the Big 12 tournament? Because I think if Bo Blessy can round out into starter number 4, even if he can't go 6 innings scoreless like he did against Gonzaga, whether due to health, conditioning, if he's starter number 4 in a long regional weekend or something, I think you could do a lot worse than that. And so maybe you focus on finding 3 starters and everything for the Big 12 series these last few weekends of conference play and let him kind of take the reins every midweek.
Yeah, again, you have 2 midweeks left in 4 series. So it's an opportunity. They're both against the same team. So I don't know how much you learn, but –
so it'd be like midweek, and then Big 12 tournament spot for him, potentially, you know, if you're playing a 3rd, 4th game in the Big 12 tournament.
Yeah.
That way he could get 3 starts under his belt in games that have no consequence toward the regular season Big 12 championship before we get to the postseason where you might need him. And I don't know. I like, it's total speculation. I'm kind of obsessed with the concept of Bo Blessy, and like, people who know more than me listening to this might be like, hey, he's not pitching this year. Like, get over it.
Right.
But I'm like, okay, well, why did you put him out there for an inning against OU if, like, we weren't going to try to work him back in some way?
Yep.
And again, he might not get back to that form we saw against Gonzaga in the first weekend. But I can't get it out of my head. I can't quit thinking about what he might become. And so, I don't know. I'm just throwing that out there that I wonder if maybe he's your midweek guy this last month of the season.
I would like to see Jacob Rogers with no thought that he's going to go more than 2 innings. Maybe that's a bullpen roll. Because I think he has good stuff. He's just been turned on a couple of times. They rocked him. Was that in the 3rd inning? They rocked him a couple of times back-to-back, and he got pulled. But once through the order, he looks pretty good. So maybe if it's... if he gets put in the bullpen and he's in a position, or He didn't throw too many pitches. He could probably be in the bullpen this midweek, but you probably won't have him since he pitched on Sunday. I don't know. Yeah. I'm also fascinated with Bo Blessy because I think he has the best stuff on the team. And they were so high on him in the summer, in the fall, in the spring. It's like, I need to see that.
Yeah, and I probably would have dropped the Bo Blessy stuff by now had he not pitched against OU. Right. It's like, okay, you're using one of those travel spots on him. You put him out there in an inconsequential spot because you were going to lose that game. But it was like, clearly they wanted to see what he could do. And maybe they got their answer there and said, okay, like, you're done for the season. But I don't know. I think midweek might be a perfect spot for him if they're still trying to ease him back.
If Bo Blessy's going to pitch as a Red Raider, it'll be this year, yes? I mean, I think he'll just
try to
get in the draft because, I mean, he's getting older, right?
I think this is year four of playing, and I guess he has a COVID year, but a lot of guys don't like to go to their last year of eligibility because they lose especially so much pitchers. Leverage in the draft.
Especially pitchers.
Yeah.
Tech will need all the arms they can get for the postseason. I still think this is a really good team. I agree, Greg. I think this is a really good team. It's not a great team,
yeah.
But offensively, you're a great team, I think.
You were the kind of team in years past that could win a regional 3-0 and be done with it. I just don't think this team – we've seen enough sample sizes now, Iowa, Oklahoma, Baylor, that like – you can win 2 out of 3 against almost anybody. Can you go 3-0 against good postseason caliber teams? Probably not. And so I think this team in the postseason is going to have to like really grind for everything that they get. And you know, if you do win a regional, it's going to be ugly. It'll probably be in a spot where both teams in the regional final have one loss. If you go to a super, I'm sure it'd be a 3-game series that you win. So, yeah, I think that they still have that capability to take 2 out of 3 against almost anyone. It's just not going to be as smooth and pretty as some past Tadlock teams.
Tad says, I thought Kyle Robinson was pulled prematurely, gave up back-to-back singles in the middle. Both guys ended up scoring when Gurton took the mound, also on back-to-back hits. Yeah, I really thought Kyle Robinson should have been pulled earlier. He worked through it, and then they pulled him – you know, at the next sign of trouble, I'd have to go back at the pitch count. What?
That was frustrating because both of those guys on the back-to-back singles, there were 2-out singles, and I think he had both batters down to an 0-2 or a 1-2 count. And, of course, that inning turned into major trouble for you. It ultimately cost you the sweep. So, yeah, just another example of this team being kind of like really close to – turning that corner from good to great team or good to great outcome on a weekend and just not quite being able to get it done.
Yeah, so Robinson threw 71 pitches. I don't know what his limit is. 71 out of the bullpen is quite a bit. I thought that really was a fantastic outing for him. And I think it was, Keith – the oft-referenced Keith Patrick from the Dinger Derby podcast, RedRaiderDugout.com, the foremost authority on Texas Tech baseball. He mentioned that I wish I would have looked at this before, but I think Kyle Robinson gave up, 16 runs, 10 runs through 16 innings or something in his first 16 and has given up one in his last 10 or 15 innings. So he's really, really whittled down that ERA now. He gave up the 2, technically, from Gurton's watch, but he's been very good, I thought. And you need him to continue to be that Kyle Robinson, you know, the one that showed up at A&M, the one that showed up against Baylor, and to have that kind of guy to go long and save a bullpen is really, really important in the regional.
Absolutely.
All right. What else do you want to talk about? Tyree Wilson first and then get to the spring game, or you want to give a couple of spring game thoughts first?
Yeah. Tyree Wilson, a defensive player.
Yeah.
He plays defense.
Yeah. You need to call him sometimes, call on him, maybe a third down. You don't want to be in a position to need to call him, but.
But if you do need a sack on third down, or metaphorically speaking, need a different kind of defense. You know, I think Tyree Wilson would make a good attorney.
I think so, yeah.
He could parlay a good playing career into saying, like, you know how some attorneys have nicknames? He could be like the Enforcer.
Oh yeah.
Maybe he could be the fourth partner at Barnett, Howard, and Williams and Wilson.
The long arms of the law.
That's good. Anyway, Tyree Wilson plays defense on the field. Barnett, Howard, and Williams plays defense in the courtroom. That was a horrible slogan. I think the Brad Pitt of barbecue might have been better. But so. Barnett, Howard, and Williams, three double Texas Tech grads based in Fort Worth, but they handle cases all across the state of Texas. You can learn more about the law firm at bhwlawfirm.com. They hope you never need them, but they're in your corner if you do, and they handle all sorts of cases. If you get hurt on the job, catastrophic injury, criminal defense, Title IX, you name it. Again, they hope you never need them, but if you do find yourself in an unfortunate circumstance, it's good to have somebody you can trust on your team. Barnett, Howard, and Williams, bhwlawfirm.com.
Two more quick baseball comments. Tad did the legwork per Keith. Kyle Robinson allowed 16 runs through his first 15 and two-thirds innings pitched this season. Since then, he's allowed one in 10 and a third, including today's outing. And I believe that was right before the Gurdon stuff, so he's technically given up three, I think. But still, a complete turnaround from Kyle Robinson. And then Greg says, if Tech ends up a two seed and if the NCAA committee doesn't revert back to last year on the bracket, which looked like it was from 2015, then Tech does have a good chance to get to a Super. Yeah, and all that is all about where you're placed. And we won't know that till we get there. Hopefully it's not that Arkansas regional, because that would be an absolute buzzsaw.
Yeah, and I'm really curious to see how the seeding goes. Texas Tech might be the team in the country with like the largest discrepancy between their top 25 ranking profile and their RPI profile, or where they're seated by the committee. Because you were ranked number 16. And of course, there's a million. You know, keep winning two out of three most weekends and finish third place, fourth place in the Big 12. You might be the number 16 team in the country staring down the barrel of a 55 RPI and being a three seed somewhere, like even worse, maybe a bubble team. So I don't know. There's always teams in basketball and baseball that have like a great net ranking or great RPI that maybe don't actually look that good to the selection committee or vice versa. And so you might be one of those teams like, yeah, you don't want to go to the Fayetteville regional, but also I don't think any regional host wants to see you as the three seed. They're like,
yeah,
crap, absolutely. We got the number 16 team in the country as the three seed in our bracket. Like, that's horrible. So I don't know. Yeah, I'm really curious to see how that shakes out.
Yeah, and you need TCU in Texas to win some games.
But not too many.
Not too many. TCU, I guess, could win out if you win out. You just need to stay ahead of them.
Yeah, I was thinking for that TCU-Texas series, you might be like rooting for the Frogs to win three, but with Texas getting swept at or by OU, I don't know. Now I feel like I just want one team to win two,
yeah,
and nobody get the sweep.
TCU to win two, I think.
I think that's probably what you would want.
Can they both win all three?
You got to handle your own business for any of this to matter, so yeah. You got to win some games in Manhattan and Morgantown.
And I think the point is you don't quite control your own destiny like you've had in the past.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of the Gambling Gauchos. If you would like to hear more really incredible segues to ad reads, Tyree Wilson draft prospects, or some spring game thoughts, and of course, the Diversified Lenders mailbag, you can head over to the Dave Campbell's Republic of Football podcast feed, where the rest of the episode is housed. Moving forward, you can look to see every episode there on the Republic of Football feed. And as always, you can follow us on social media at Gamblin' Gauchos on any social feed or on youtube.com/@GamblinGauchos. That's an @ sign. And as always, love y'all.